There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Let's go! This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Welcome to the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM. Dave Ross here at South Point Casino. Michael Lombardi joins us once again on this Wednesday. And, Michael, we've got a great show for you today. Of course, on Wednesdays, that means we have Steve Mackinnon and his fantastic numbers that you can read at Point Spread Weekly. Great information as we get ready for Super Sunday. Harry Gagnon's going to join us next hour, and I believe he's coming to us from a very exotic location, Michael. We'll get into the reasons why there. And then Lou Finicaro is going to join us in the second hour as well. Not only talk Lou's football numbers, but we're also going to have UFC 271, and we'll get Lou's thoughts on that as we have another title bout in the middleweight division. Should be a really good one, and rematch between Robert Whittaker and Israel Adesanya. But, Michael, of course, we have to start off. I can't believe it. It's Wednesday, getting closer and closer to Sunday. First of all, just as an executive and somebody who's been there, done that, what's it like for the players and the teams now? We're not seeing a whole lot of line movement here still. Everything's staying right about the same, 4.5, 48.5. But for the players, are they just itching, Michael, to get out there, whether to be to practice, get all the media done with, and really start focusing on the game?
Well, I think now, you know, the ticket situation's been handled. You got all your family members. They got hotel rooms, all the logistics of the game that the players kind of have on their plate that they need to deal with is over with. So now Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you can start to refine the game plan that was installed last week. That really, if you Zach Taylor and Sean McVay, you know, especially Sean McVay having been through it before, can really kind of nail down and focus in on, okay, here's what we're going to get. Here's what we want to run. Here's what we're going to do. And take over and kind of get into a routine. And I think the players finally now, as Wednesday enters, are locked in. And now this is going to be the 4 days of true focus of like it was a normal week. If we were back at home and everybody's got their tickets and life goes on.
You know, it's interesting because I saw yesterday and, you know, last week when we had Steve Mackinnon on, and we'll have him on again at the bottom half of this hour, he kind of showed us that the numbers, at least mathematically for these two teams statistically, are very, very similar, right, over the course of the year. We're seeing a little money come in now on the Bengals to get this down to 4, but still that total staying at 48.5. And then we hear the news yesterday, right, that Higbee, according to Sean McVay, won't be able to practice more than likely all week. But he is optimistic for Darrell Henderson to come back, and he hasn't been active for a while now. And maybe they get him back with Cam Akers, you know, and Sony Michel. So maybe a three-headed monster at running back. What do you make of what you hear from Sean McVay there? And could Henderson all of a sudden be a surprise and somebody really didn't factor into this game? And maybe he does play a bigger role in it than people think.
Well, I think the running game, David, is going to play a huge role in this game. I think there's no denying that. I think the Rams feel very confident that they're going to be able to run the football on the Bengal defensive front, which every team has done in the playoffs. I mean, we saw the Raiders do it. They only did it 13 times with Josh Jacobs. They should have did it more. You know, we saw Tennessee run the football. We saw Kansas City run the ball. And then, of course, naturally with Kansas City, they got tired of running it. Mm-hmm. So I do think McVay knows I've got to run the football. I think McVay knows I'm going to control the pace of this game. As I just mentioned on Gil's show, I think the fascinating thing about this game is both these teams offensively have won the time of possession battle. Specifically the Rams, they've been over 35 minutes in these last three games of controlling the football with their offense. They've been 50% on third down. The Bengals at 47% on third down have done a wonderful job of controlling the game, playing 34 minutes of offense. And what happens when you play that much offense? You play less defense. What happens when you play less defense? You play better defense. And I think that's going to be the key. And I see McVay seeing, licking his chops, saying, okay, Lou, you want to play some cover two? I'm going to run it right. And I'm not going to get bored running it. I'm going to run it. Now, I think he's got to decide which back he wants to run it with. Is it Michelle? Is it Akers? Is it Henderson? And we won't know that because we're not privy to the practices. But if Henderson looks like he can go, and he's the Henderson that we saw during the season, he's going to go with him. If it's not, he can go with Michelle, who can get him the yards he needs and control the clock. So the run game in this game, I think, is going to be the key to the Rams' best defense against this Bengal offense.
I think you make a very astute observation, too, because you and I have talked about this throughout the NFL season, and certainly it goes back to even when McVay got to the Super Bowl the first time around against the Patriots. It's, you know, you think about all the glitz and glamour and the Cooper Cups and the OBJs, but really when McVay's offense is the best, they do run the football. So for those people going to play those props with Sony Michel and you know, Cam Akers, remember that Henderson could actually play in this game and be a big factor in it. So that should factor in your decision. But for winning and losing, you're right, it does come down to that running game. It was very interesting what I heard from Frank Pollock. He's a Bengals assistant coach. He said on Tuesday that the O-line isn't really concerned about that Rams D-line, but basically it's something that the media and the fans and maybe we as you know, a gambling network, we might get caught up in it to try to figure out how you stop 99 and the rest of those guys. But to the point about running the football, right, the O-line we know is not good at pass protection. But could they be sneaky better at running it? And sometimes we've heard the Rams stars don't like to be run at. Von Miller, Aaron Donald. Is that the best way to try to neutralize that D-line of the Rams?
You know, I don't know what tape Frank's watching. You know, I'm not sure that I agree with Frank's analysis of this. But, you know, I do think that, you know, this is a tough matchup. Somebody's got to block Aaron Donald. And I think the Rams' approach will be very similar to their approach against the 49ers. Look, we're going to rush five guys. We're going to set the edges on the outside, and we're going to force single blocks. And we're going to make you have to handle it. And I think ultimately that's going to be the challenge. Now, as I said earlier, this Bengal team is 48.8% on third down. And that's allowed them to control the ball basically 33 minutes in the game. And that's really what's happened, because in just these 27 minutes that their defense was on the field, they've allowed 371 yards in three games. Think about that.
Mm.
So if that shifts in any direction, especially if it shifts in the Rams' favor, I think this is going to tilt the game to the Rams significantly. And I know McVay sees it that way as well. Look, the thing that has saved this Bengal team is their kicker and their ability to control the football with their offense. Those two things have made it. They haven't been explosive. I mean, Chase has got one touchdown in three games. You know, the way we talk about it, you think he's got 50 touchdowns. You know, they've had one touchdown rushing in three games. The way we talk about it, you think they have 18. You know, I mean, they have been very fortunate. And Burrow certainly deserves a ton of credit. He's run the ball nine times, and he's gotten out of a lot of trouble. But I don't know if that can happen again. And I know this. Sean McVay's not going to let this one slip away. I think he learned his lesson against Belichick, and I think he's going to see what they're doing. They're not complicated defensively. I think he's going to really take advantage, and he's not going to get bored with the run game. He won't get bored. Andy Reid got bored.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to.
Again, you know, we've talked about it before. When you look at McVay and the way he was outcoached by Bill Belichick, I don't think there's any other way. I think McVay has actually made that. He's actually come out and said, yeah, I got outcoached badly my first time around with what we thought. Clearly he had the better team in that first runaround. It feels like he has the better team again when you get the star power. Jalen Ramsey, best corner, you can make the argument in the league. Cooper Kupp, certainly the best receiver. He was the best receiver this year in the NFL. And Aaron Donald is the gold standard there at defensive tackle. You look at the sum of the parts for the Bengals, do they add up to that star power that the Rams have? And how much does it play in that Sean McVay is the guy that taught Zach Taylor and the familiarity that those two have?
Well, I think this. Let's go back to Sean McVay being critical of his last game. What he should be critical of himself is lack of adjustments, right? He had a couple chances to make plays. Goff's late on a throw that McCourty comes over and tips the ball in the end zone when we know that that Brandon Cooks is wide open. You know, that's the touchdown that he misses, right? He's also got Cooks out wide open for a touchdown that he throws the ball a little bit early that Gilmore intercepts. So I think really where Sean made his mistakes in that last Super Bowl was the adjustments in the game. Not that I can't imagine he didn't anticipate Belichick was going to be the way he played it, which is basically a set the edge front, both mm-hmm. sides. But I think the adjustments within that was his concern. I don't think he's going to have that problem. You know, people keep saying, well, you know, the Bengals adjusted great in the second half. Yeah, you know what they did? They rushed three. They dropped everybody else. They played man, and they got away with it. Then nobody called defensive holding. You know, nobody really called any penalties. And so they were able to play aggressive. If you're any coach in the North, if you're Mike Tomlin and you're watching that tape, you're saying, well, they won't let us get away with playing like this during the regular season. You know, it's great that they did that, but we're not going to get away with this. We can't copy what they're doing. Now, if they let us do that, we'll do it, but I think we're going to get, we'll tackle Kelce as much as anybody, but if they're not going to call it, they're going to call it against us in an October Sunday afternoon, I promise you. So I think a little bit of that, and I think McVay knows this, and I think McVay's going to skip back to, he knows that if he executes this, I said this to start, of the three teams he's played this year, I think he would say, he's not going to say this publicly because of where the Bengals are, but he would say this is the fourth team of the four.
Wow. You know, again, maybe we need a little bit more time to really go deeper on this, but I do wonder, when you know each other as well as these two know each other, Michael, is it I coach to outsmart because we're playing chess and checkers here, or I do what I do, and if you can stop it, I tip my cap to you?
Well, I think look, Raheem Morris knows this. He knows as I know, sitting here, in spite of what Frank Pollock says, he knows they can't block me, right? So Raheem Morris knows that. He knows they can't block us. There's no way. There's no matchup that they win against us, whether it's Donald on any one of those inside guys, whether it's Miller on either tackle, whether it's Leonard Floyd on either tackle. We win. We're going to win every time, okay? So what's their solution to that? Go back to the Raider game. Throw the ball quick. Get it out.
That's right.
You know, try to get in a rhythm passing game. You know, try to spread us out. Try to do that. And that's what he's been working on, his nickel fronts, to see if he can match up and handle that. That's all he's worked on. And so that is really where the mindset comes into, and making sure Chase doesn't beat him.
That's it. I mean, it does get down to being that simple on the X's and O's here. You've got one extremely gifted playmaker on the outside, Ja'Marr Chase. But to your point, only one touchdown in the last couple games here. He's not been a world beater so far. He has been effective, but maybe not as everybody has projected him to be. Michael, when we come back, some news and notes around the NFL and how it might affect your future plays in the NFL in 2022. Come on back. It is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
With the big game right around the corner, it's time to download BetMGM Sports. It's Nevada's premier sports betting app. BetMGM has all of your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much, much more. Download the BetMGM app today or stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open up an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. If you have a problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Back alongside Michael Lombardi, I am Dave Ross. This is the Lombardi Line right here on VSiN. And Michael, again, you know, we're talking about the Rams and the Bengals for good reason. They've been the center of the NFL landscape here for the last week and a half, and will be up to Sunday. But you saw some other news and notes around the NFL that really could affect people in their futures play. And we know right after the Super Bowl, there's going to be a lot of lines that come out, projecting who might win their divisions. You really have to get into the weeds a little bit of these coaches. And we see the changeover in the NFL, and you know all about this and how important it is to kind of figure out what you might project from these teams next year. Sean Payton out in New Orleans. I think it took some by surprise, but not all. But they did elevate Dennis Allen to be the head coach, of course, the former head coach of the Raiders, and now he will be the top dog again in New Orleans. When you look at philosophy, and I know we can see what he did defensively, but how does that change? Does it change when you look at Dennis Allen now taking over the Saints as we try to project them in 2022?
Well, I think, you know, this is going to require a little bit more than just taking over. I think this is going to require almost a Chip and Joanna Gaines fixer-upper, because you're going to have to do a lot of work. I mean, you're going to have to get Chip in there with a sledgehammer and have him start knocking some walls down and rebuilding this, because, you know, they've made their run, right? They've made their run into trying to get there, and if Bill Vinovich would have made a half-decent call, they might have been the team in the Super Bowl, not the Rams. But, you know, that's water under the bridge, and I think this is going to be a fixer-upper. And I hope they give Dennis Allen enough time and enough patience to, you know, to allow him to fix it up. Because even though Mickey Loomis is saying that, you know, we're not going to take a step back, they're going to take a step back. I mean, they've got serious cap issues. You know, they don't have a quarterback on their roster currently. Taysom's Hill love affair was really by the man who left. I don't know who else is in love with them besides Sean. I like him, but I like him as a kind of an alternative player, not as the full-time player.
Right.
You know, I think we're going to see a little bit more of that in the NFL, by the way, not to get sidetracked here, but I do think we are going to enter an era in the next 3 or 4 years. We're going to see multiple quarterbacks playing at the same time. I think this idea was too effective when Taysom was doing it to not be utilized by other teams. So that's off on where I could see Taysom having trade value, not at this contract, where a certain team could say, you know, he'd be perfect. I put him in here and run some stuff with him. You know, this would be really kind of good. But I just think it's going to take a remodel here. It really is. And they don't have a quarterback. And when you're remodeling without a quarterback, I mean, the Patriots spent all that money last offseason, and it would have gone to waste. They would have had Cam at the quarterback, which wouldn't have been good enough. If they don't get a rookie quarterback who they now can build with, their outlook's completely different.
Right.
And I think that's where the Saints are right now.
You know, it is, by the way, so many areas I want to go there, because, you know, you can go back to the Steelers. You know, they did this years ago, decades ago, with Tommy Maddox and Cordell Stewart slash, right? And that kind of became in vogue. So maybe you could see a little bit and harken back to that with the Saints and see how Dennis Allen tries to use Taysom Hill. But, you know, we hear this all the time, certainly on social media. Oh, these jobs are terrible. Who would want these jobs? Well, you're normally taking over because something went wrong. And you're right about the cap is a mess in New Orleans. So let's see how much time they give Dennis Allen and whether or not he's being dealt a bad hand. Because I think a lot of people say the same things about Lovie Smith in Houston. They go, who would want that job? Well, Lovie Smith wanted the job. He's got the job now there. What do you make of Lovie 2.0? I mean, I think people forget he did get the Bears to the Super Bowl with Rex Grossman at quarterback. And I know it was a long time ago, but that actually did happen. What do you make of Lovie and his philosophy in Houston?
Well, I think they give him an experienced head coach. I think something that David Culley wasn't. And it wasn't David Culley's fault. When you hire a coach with no coordinator experience and no head coaching experience at any point over his long career, and you get mad because he's inexperienced, whose fault's that? Yours or his?
Right.
You know, you hired him. You know, he didn't just steal the job. He didn't just come in the middle of the night and take over the desk, you know. And so it's your fault. But I think Lovie gives them some maturity. He gives them some stability. And he certainly gives them the ability to stand in front of the team and coach the team. And we saw it with the way they played defense last year. Even though they weren't very good, they played defense and they played hard all year. They responded to his leadership, which I think is critical. You know, when we talk about this slash idea, and I wrote about it in Gridiron Genius, and one of the when we talked about the future of football, the last one of the last chapters, I talked about how I truly believed in the next 5 years, and I wrote the book in 18, that we would see a team have almost two Deshaun Watsons, almost go back into the era of the T formation, where you had two quarterbacks in the backfield and would rotate who was the halfback, who was the tailback. I think you're going to see a little bit more of that, because I think it's going to be harder for the defenses, especially in light of the way Josh Allen has taken over right. the run game of the Bills, how he played in that game, how he became so hard to defend because he can run and pass. You know, it's a little different than Lamar, who's not as effective as a passer because you're playing it. But Lamar, remember now, Lamar, they don't run an offense that allows Lamar to run or pass. It's all RPOs.
Right.
And I don't. That's not where I think this is needs to go. I think this is more of a conversation about how can we bring the old into the new and give the quarterback the ability to throw and run in a drop-back pass game.
That leads me perfectly down to Jacksonville, because we know Doug Peterson is the new head coach down there. But we also know Mike McCoy is the QB's coach. So I don't know if you are clairvoyant and you could see into the future here for Jacksonville, but it sounds like you just described maybe the way they're going to use Trevor Lawrence, kind of like Kyler Murray with Mike McCoy when he was in Arizona, use Kyler Murray, right? So could you see that evolution in Jacksonville next year with Peterson? Because when they went to the Super Bowl, the Carson Wentz year, and of course he got hurt, but they utilized his legs a lot. Do you see that happening next year in Jacksonville?
Well, remember, when they went to the Super Bowl, Frank Wright was the coordinator, right? They ran the ball quite a bit. They had two running backs, David, on
That's
that
right.
team that averaged over 5 yards a carry. You know, 5 yards a carry. They traded for Ajayi during the season, mm-hmm. and they had LeGarrette Blount. And their run game was now they transitioned their run game from more conventional to the RPO, especially when Nick Foles came in. Because really, at the end of the day, I don't think Wentz is a great RPO quarterback. I think he's a better, you know, play-action quarterback. And so for me, I think that's the challenge. What is Doug Peterson? You know, he's a West Coast basis guy. You know, and when he first came to Philly, literally, and one of the reasons I was so critical of him was when he first came to Philly, he basically just took the Chiefs playbook and tried to run it in Philadelphia.
Right.
And it looked bad. He was copying every play that the Chiefs had run that he did. And then through time, as he improved, I was wrong, he improved. He then changed the offense. And then what I thought he did a really good job is the Super Bowl year is he adapted that offense around Wentz and then went to Foles with the adaptation. So to me, I think that's going to be the challenge. He's got to sit back in that chair in Jacksonville and say, okay, what do I really want to run with Trevor Lawrence? Like, who do we want to become? And then build the team that way. Don't come in there and say, we're going to run this. Sit back and say, okay, what will make Trevor Lawrence look like a great player? And build the offense accordingly. And I think a little bit of that is eliminating some of the RPO stuff.
Wow. They're going to be a very interesting team to see where their win total is pre-flop next year, because we know how low it was last year. I'll be curious to see if they look at that coaching regime and say it's been upgraded from Urban Meyer or if it stays where they kind of had that number. You know, I want to go back to a team obviously you know well and a man you know well, and that's Joe Judge, because I know a lot of people go, why would you want to bring Joe Judge back? And now he kind of gets elevated when he was there the first time, special teams coach. Now he's an offensive assistant. What does Joe Judge and Bill Belichick, what does that brain trust look like, and does this fit again?
Well, I mean, look, here's what I think we have to kind of, and I said this on Nesson when I did the show on Monday up there. I do it again on Thursday at night. But I think what we have to stop is Bill Belichick, this will be what the offense that he wants to run.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be Joe Judge's offense, or if he hires Adam Gase, his offense, or, you know, Mick Lombardi's offense, whomever, right? It's
right.
going to be what Bill wants to run, and Bill is going to go in there and help the coach. He's going to say, look, here's what I think we need to do. Here's where we had too much. Here's where we need more. Here's the way I want to call it back. Here's what I want to do. Here's the quarterback. All the things that I think that Doug Peterson needs to do in Jacksonville, he's going to do for Mac Jones. He knows Mac Jones now. He's watched Mac Jones now for a year. Who is Mac Jones, and what can we do to enhance his play? I think that's what's going to be. And then Judge is going to fit in accordingly, not Judge is going to fit around it.
It's going, yeah, exactly. And I think sometimes people, whether or not Joe Judge was in over his head in New York, it seemed like it worked in New England the first time around. We've seen this even with Josh McDaniels, where he came back to New England, clearly worked out 2.0 to get him another head coaching job. Let's see if that maturation process begins again for Joe Judge in 2.0 in New England. Michael, when we come back, again, we always love to have the numbers of Steve Mackinnon. We're going to get those as we look ahead to Super Sunday before you put down and make those wagers. Come on back. It's the Lombardi Line right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Join our own Stormy Bonantoni on Friday at 6 p.m. for the Big Game Betting and Beers event right here at the South Point Casino in Las Vegas. Stormy will be joined by our guys in the desert, Chris Andrews, Jimmy Vaccaro, and Vinny Maiulo for a fun and informative look at betting this year's big game and stories from behind the book about all the action these legends have seen over the years. The event is free for anyone over 21, so stop by the South Point on Friday at 6 p.m. for specials on Budweiser, purchase signed copies of Chris Andrews' book, and learn from these book making experts, and I say legends indeed. Dave Ross back alongside Michael Lombardi. This is the Lombardi Line right here on VSiN. It is Wednesday. We always love having our Point Spread Weekly editor, Steve Mackinnon, to join us now with his fascinating numbers. And again, we were talking about, boy, you got to get Point Spread Weekly. Certainly, if you haven't gotten it by now, you need to, because it's great information as we lead up to the Super Bowl. And Steve, let's just start off with your stats that you have this week. And it kind of gets to what we talked about last week, certainly offensively, that these teams on paper look very, very similar. You have effective offensive points in the projections for this game, and they're almost identical. Cincinnati, 26.36. The Rams, 26.46. But the defense is where it seems you can see the variance there, with the Rams having a distinct advantage.
You pretty much summed it up there, Dave. I did this last year. I used a forecasting model to project what I call my effective stats and projections for both the teams and the individuals. And like you said, the offenses, the numbers are pretty similar. Now, one of the things I look for in the Super Bowl, and I'm going to combine this week's article with last week's article, you look for that team that has the better chance to hit the 30-point mark. It's a key number in the Super Bowl historically. Now, if you look at my effective, in that article, you see the effective points over the last 10 games. In that span, LA has topped that mark four times, 30 points or more. Cincinnati just twice. So I still have to maybe side slightly with an offensive edge to the Rams. And then when you combine that with what is a somewhat of a sizable defensive edge to the Rams, let me say at this point, I'm sort of leaning Rams here.
Yeah, me too, Steven. And I love your overall time of possession forecast scrimmage plays. Now, that is based on the whole season, correct?
Well, I actually took the last 10 games just so we'd have I like to kind of maybe throw away some of those numbers early. The Rams are a little different early. They're working Stafford into the lineup. They've made a lot of changes.
Right.
So I think a recency method kind of brings about more accuracy.
You know, gentlemen.
Yeah, no doubt. And this is one of my key points in this game, which to me, I'd love you to pick your brain on this, is that the Rams have controlled the football 35 minutes and 11 seconds, and their defense has only been on the field for 24:50. And the Bengals have been, I think, 32, and their defense is on the field for 28. But to me, this is the essence of the game. And speak to that. I know you've done it over 10 games, but if you just look at the postseason, this Ram defense has been dominant because they play less plays because of the fact they've been 18% allowing their opponent to convert third downs.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, Michael, and this is one of the reasons that I am going to be on the side of the Rams here. Now, if you look at the way the Rams have been playing against the types of opponents, and I forecasted these things in my article this week as to how they might strategize their offense, how Cincinnati might strategize its offense. You'll see that I have the Rams leaning a little bit more towards the run while actually outgaining Cincinnati overall. So that if you put that recipe together, that means Cincinnati's defense is probably going to be on the field a little longer. Cincinnati's going to have to rely more on passing the ball. They're going to have to hit big plays if they're going to want to be in this game. But if you look at my numbers, I have the Rams actually gaining more yards per pass attempt. So if you recall last week, we talked about the four key elements to success in the Super Bowl: running the football for more yardage, hitting the big plays through the air, more yards per pass attempt, limiting the turnovers, and then the time of possession. As we walk through this, Michael, you can see I'm kind of leaning to the Rams on at least three or maybe four of those four categories.
It's amazing how running the football and defense still matters, Michael.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, look, the fact that they've only allowed six third downs to get converted out of 32 attempts. I mean, this is the, one of the untold stories of the postseason. And I mean, it isn't like the Cardinals aren't good on offense. We know the Bucs are good on offense, and the 49ers, in spite of their limitations at quarterback, were typically good on third down. So I just think, to me, the more you peel back what the Rams have done defensively, as all the conversation has been on their offense, I think that's going to be the difference in the game.
Talking with Steve Mackinnon, of course, our editor here at Point Spread Weekly. And, Steve, you know, I'm looking at these props. And, again, I'm kind of old school sides and totals guy. But the prop market has exploded in the NFL. And I think we're going to see the most volume come in this year that we've ever seen before on props. And, of course, you're going to bet the quarterbacks, right? And when I look at your numbers here and you're projecting the completions and passing yards, and I just want to start off with quarterbacks first. And I'm seeing across the board, you're seeing Joe Burrow at about 276, 277 at most shops. You've got him projected here for 291. So that's, if you like that over, and I do like the Burrow over here, to your point, if they can't run the ball as effectively, they're going to have to do it from the air, and they could be game script behind and have to do it late. Is that how you get to those numbers there? And you have him for completions at 25.2, clearly five more there than you project for Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, again, I think this goes to the recipe. I think Cincinnati is going to struggle to run the ball. You have to think against this front of the Rams. Now, that's going to put almost the entire onus of the offense on Joe Burrow. I'm not saying the Rams are going to completely shut down the Bengals because I think Burrow is going to get his numbers. That doesn't exactly equate to winning games, however, especially in the Super Bowl. You can go through the log of Super Bowl games. The team that passes for more yards typically loses.
Yeah, I totally see that script there. And again, when you look at the rushing yards, and this is an interesting conversation I had last night here on VSiN, Joe Burrow, you project him for 7.2. Most of the props I'm seeing out there at around 11. So you think he's going to have to get the ball out of his hands. The defensive line with the Rams, we know they have a distinct advantage over the O-line, no matter what the Bengals have been saying this week. Do you think that's why it gets limited and he doesn't get over that double-digit threshold?
Well, I tell you what could limit this is the fact that the Rams are probably going to be able to rush him with four guys and be successful at it. That leaves a second layer of defense, and Burrow's not going to want to run against that. You typically get running opportunities when you can escape from a blitz, that type of thing, where you get maybe you're going to top that 11.5 number.
Yeah, you know, I kind of agree. I think the one thing the Bengals have to do in this game, which is I'm all with you on Burrow and his overpassing yardage, is they're going to replace, because of their offensive line, they're going to replace some of their runs, especially on first down, to try to get ahead of the down and distance with some spread throws, much like they did against the Raiders. Try to get in second and four, second and six, then mix it up a little bit, but guarantee themselves easy yards on first down. Maybe take a shot. But you're right, Steve. I think if the Rams play their cover two, roll the coverage to Chase and say, okay, we're going to rush four and see what you can do, it's a long game for Stafford, for Burrow, and he's going to have a lot of completions, and he's going to have to make some plays. He's going to be the driving force of the offense.
Gentlemen, I want to jump to the wide receivers here because, you know, I keep mentioning Cooper Kupp. You saw his prop in the first round of the playoffs. It was 100. He got over that. Then the next week was 102, got over that. And it's still right around that threshold of 102 again. And, Steve, you project him in this game for 117.7. Just to bust right through that glass window again. I mean, is the ceiling, it's never too high for this guy, because no matter what the prop scenario is, he just seems to go over.
Yeah, you know, he's put up some massive numbers against better cornerbacks than the Bengals are going to put up. So I don't think the Bengals can completely afford to sell out their defense on Cup. They're going to get beat in other ways. So I think they're going to have to be pretty honest about it, and Cup's going to beat it.
Hey, Steve, you know, McPherson's been unbelievable, right? He's made 12 kicks. He's averaged, you know, three games he's made 12 kicks. He's attempted 12 kicks. That's four, you know, that's four a game. And his over prop is just 1.5. Did you run any numbers on that? I mean, I don't know if you have to run numbers. You just take the over, right?
Yeah, I didn't run any numbers on this. But, yeah, I'm thinking maybe one Bengals touchdown, three field goals, possibly four. If they're going to get up to that, to any type of level where they're going to compete in this game. So I would definitely lean the way he's playing. They'll probably rely on him in situations where in other games they may have gone for it on a fourth down.
Well, that's music to my ears, gentlemen, because I took the McPherson over 7.5 points prop. So thank goodness that you and Michael are on my side on that one. I feel a lot more confident about that. Steve, got to let you go. But, again, follow him on Twitter, at Steve Mackinnon. Does a great job of Point Spread Weekly. Steve, fascinating numbers as always. And I'm sure the people out there, if they're reading it, they're going to be benefiting from it this Sunday. Thanks, as always.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Enjoy the game.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate you.
Thank you
so much, Steve.
Just can't believe the next time we talk to Steve, football season officially will be over, which brings a tear to my eye, Michael. Not ready for football season to end just yet. When we come back, I wonder if Michael Lombardi believes that the Rams actually have a home field advantage despite being the road team in this Super Bowl. Come on back. It's the Lombardi Line right here on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Go for a huge score during the big game with BetMGM. Simply download the BetMGM app and place a $10 money line wager on pro football's final game. If either team scores a touchdown, you're going to win $200 in free bets regardless of your wager's outcome. Just use the bonus code SB200 when you make your very first wager. You're also going to earn BetMGM rewards points that you can redeem for room nights and dining at MGM resorts nationwide. Only at BetMGM. Eligibility restrictions do apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older to wager. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued is non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. If you have a problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi or Nevada. Dave Ross alongside Michael Lombardi. This is the Lombardi Line right here on VSiN. And of course, Michael, we had never seen before in the history of pro football,
yeah,
the home team being the host city and winning the Super Bowl until last year when the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did it. And they, yeah, just absolutely walloped the Kansas City Chiefs. Now we have a chance to go back-to-back here with the Rams at SoFi this year. And before we really break down the numbers of how the Rams did at home, it didn't seem like that would be such a huge advantage. They didn't have fans there really last year. Was that a difference in the game last year for the Buccaneers, being at home, the being comfortable, sleeping in your own bed, all those sort of things? Or is that misnomer kind of overplayed?
You know, I think the combination of COVID, Andy Reid's son, Brett, having the accident and unfortunately having the horrible effects of that young girl affected their team. I think there's no doubt about that. I think it was all through their team, and you could feel it. At least I could feel it. And no fans. I mean, look, these teams, we talk about home field advantage in these games like they matter. And we spent most of the 17, 18 weeks during the regular season talking about teams are really good at being able to handle crowd noise. And we know this, that anytime you're really led by your offense, you can play well on the road. Because when you get first downs, you quiet the crowd. When you can't get first downs, the crowd becomes more enthusiastic. So I don't think this is going to be a game about home field. I think this is going to be a game about comfort. You know, the Rams can sleep in their own beds until really they're going to stay at probably the same team hotel they stayed at all during the season. They're going to do pretty much what they typically do. So they have a sense of comfort. And for the Bengals, at least now they get out of cold Cincinnati where they don't have an indoor facility. They had to go over the Cincinnati Bearcats facility and use that. And now they can get to handle the bright sunshine and enjoy some warm weather outside of Cincinnati as they kind of get through their preparation. So I'm not as big on what I think the home field. I don't think it's going to affect the game. I think the fact that Bengals offensive line can't block them isn't going to be predicated by the snap count.
You know, you look at what the Rams have done at SoFi so far this year, and overall, hey, 7 wins out of 10 and just win, baby. That's what they're thinking. Of course, but covering's been a different story. 5-5 as the home favorite, 6-3. And in the playoffs, ATS 1-1 in those spots, did not cover against the Niners in that title game, winning by 3. They don't care about those numbers. We understand that. But from a betting perspective here, do you read into those numbers at all? Because as we discussed with Steve McEnany last week, traditionally, when you have favorites of under 7, the number doesn't really play into it that often. It's either, you know, the favorite covers relatively easily or the underdog wins outright. Where do you make that number being at 4 playing this game at SoFi Stadium?
Well, I think this, I think it's not so much about the home field. It's about playing fast, right? And I think that when you look at what the Rams have done in this playoff run, they have outscored their opponents 38-13 in the first half. And they have been dominant in the first half. And so, you know, I don't know what that first half number is, Matt Santos, but that's certainly something to think about. And I think this 4 numbers, it's 3. Mm-hmm. I like that play. I would come back, and I think this number coming back from 4.5 to 4, I just think to me that there's too much within the Rams offense that creates a problem for the Bengal defense. They're not going to take advantage of Andy Reid not getting bored and not wanting to run the ball. They're not going to be able to take advantage of Ryan Tannehill not being able to complete a darn swing pass to a back who's wide open, you know? And so I think there's some liability and pliability within their team. And we keep saying, well, Burrow's great. Hey, Burrow's great. There's no doubt. Burrow's great. I'm not arguing that Burrow's great. But Stafford's averaged 9 yards per attempt. Burrow's averaging 7.7. You know, Burrow's been sacked 12 times in this game, in the 3 games. He's taken a beating, and they're giving up almost 7 yards per attempt, their defense. I mean, the Bengals have scored 5 touchdowns. They've allowed 6. Once again, it leads all roads lead back to who? McPherson.
Right.
That's the key. And I wonder, and this will be an interesting conversation, David, I wonder how aggressive Zach Taylor will be when, say, he has a 4th-and-3 at the Rams 23, he settle for the 4-yard field? Does he kick it?
He kicks
it. Or does he go for it on 4th down?
Michael, I'm right.
Now, Will Hill's going to be screaming for him to go.
Oh, I know.
Will Hill's going to be screaming for him to go for it. I mean, he's going to be screaming for it. He hates kicks. But the kicks are why they're here.
Yes. Yes, Michael.
Will Hill's going to be having a heart attack. He's going to be going crazy. I'm going to get the text will be coming through. I wouldn't kick it here. He's got automatic points.
Yes.
Like, okay, let's take it another step. Let's say we have the ball at the Ram 8-yard line, 4th-and-3. You kicking or you going? My man up in Connecticut, he's going.
You can't
win this game with 3 points. Right. What will Zach Taylor do?
I think he's going to kick it. Because to your point, against Tennessee, you remember that first quarter? They had a couple spots they could have gone for it. They didn't. They settled for three. They led 6-0.
Everybody complained.
That's why I told Scott Seidenberg last night on the look ahead right here in VSiN. I said at 150-1, Evan McPherson to me is a live candidate to be MVP to your game script that you just talked about. If the Bengals
he
are
he is a late, live candidate. Yeah.
He really is at 150-1 because to your point, Michael, Zach Taylor has shown you who he is throughout this postseason. He's taken the points. He did it against the Raiders in the first round, clearly did against Tennessee, and settled for a long game winner, which the kid nailed, and then did it even against Kansas City last week. He feels like when that kid trots out there, it's money in the bank. I want to get the shirts, take the points, and I know VSiN doesn't want to hear that because everybody wants to go for it these days. You got to take the points when they're available because you just don't know how it's going to be played out in that fourth quarter. Early in the game, Michael, I'm right there with you. I don't know what the scenario, unless it's fourth and inches. I think Zach Taylor, if it's fourth and two or more, I think you see a lot of field goals coming, and that's why I love McPherson's prop at 7.5 that you and Steve Mackinnon just broke down there. I do think that you're right. Whether or not social media agrees or not, that's the way Zach Taylor is going to play this game.
Well, I think this. Look, he's only gone for it one time in the playoffs on fourth down. One time. Okay, so in three games, he's only gone for it one time, and he converted that. He was 1-for-1. But let's go back to a game. Let's go back to the Rams game against the Bucs when Bruce Arians went for that 3 points when it seemed like it didn't even matter at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those 3 points ended up getting him to tie the game, but nobody wanted to go for it at that point. Twitter was completely, this is the dumbest thing of all time. It's a little bit like when Belichick went for it from 4th and 9 at his own, at the Colts 19, you know, and why would you go for that? Well, if Hightower tackles the guy in the hole, Taylor, they're going to get the ball back and they might win the game.
Right.
And I think Taylor, through his experience in the Kansas City game, that he was fortunate, even though he kept going for it. Now, part of the reason he was going for it is he's scared he's going to give up points, leave too much time on the clock. Remember that, Buffalo. So I think that's why I did it. But in this game, my question is, what is the aggressiveness of him in it? Now, I could see this, David. I could see this. I could see him at midfield in one of those situations where he doesn't want to give the ball back to the Rams.
And that's fair.
Because he knows that the Rams control it. I get that. I could understand that. But I don't think he's going to turn down points. And I'm going to have a zillion texts from the great Will Hill telling me it's the dumbest call of all time.
You know, you and I see eye to eye on that. There's a time and a place. If it's at the 50 and it's fourth and short, I'm with you. Go for it. Because you're trying to keep possession to ultimately get into points range. But once you get into that range where you have points, if the game is still close, you don't know how it's going to play out in the fourth quarter. I'm with you. Kick it. And by the way, Michael, the misnomer here is, you know, Zach Taylor, young coach, Sean McVay, boy genius. These guys are more conservative than I'm sure social media would like, and Twitter football certainly hates. These guys are not roll the dice, but these are not Brandon Staley's. These are kind of anti-Brandon Staley's,
yeah.
And they've gotten to the Super Bowl. I mean,
yeah, that's right.
That's got to matter, right?
We're not allowed to talk about it because it's not in vogue, you know, and because Staley, according to some people, had never made a bad fourth down call all year. I think they said one. It's a joke, but they said one. I mean, I could find a lot of them. I mean, I've had talked to more people in the league that are just amazed he still has a job. I mean, they feel like if he goes for that, I mean, look, there's some situations in the old days where if you made these kind of mistakes, you were gone. I mean, Sean McDermott, those 13 seconds, they're going to live with him forever. They're going to live with him forever. Nobody can figure out how he lost that one.
No doubt about it. Again, it's got to be about winning. It's got to be the ultimate decider. And these two teams, although conservative head coaches in the red zone, they're both in the Super Bowl, and it can't not be just by happenstance. When we come back, we're going to take a look at some prop scenarios from the two quarterbacks when you come back right here in the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.